WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Taylor Swift just schooled Apple on paying artists. Sunday morning, she posted an open letter on Tumblr criticizing Apple for not paying artists royalties during the free 3-month trial period of the new music streaming service, Apple Music. Said she wouldn't allow them to stream her huge hit album, 1989. Before that day was out, Apple folded, agreed, changed. It was a victory for Swift, but music streaming is still changing everything. This hour on Point, Taylor Swift, Apple Music, Spotify, more, and the future of music in the age of streaming. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. How, where do you listen now? What do you pay for? What do you want? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Of course, Taylor Swift is as big as they come in the music business now. Still, this was bold taking on Apple. Here was on CNBC's Squawk Box. This was broadcaster Carl Quintanilla talking about the magnitude of Taylor Swift taking on Apple. Slava Rubin, CEO of Indiegogo, responds.
She's 25. She made the biggest company in the world reverse course in 24
hours. That's astounding.
In less than 24 hours, 17 to be exact. She's been talking about this stuff for a long time. She owns a big chunk of her own music company. That makes her a little bit different here. Plus, she's big. Here was ABC's Good Morning America last fall, just a few weeks after the release of her album, 1989. Taylor Swift talking about the success of the top-selling album despite her decision not to have it on Spotify.
I've been very optimistic and enthusiastic about the state of the music industry, and thankfully so have my fans. Mm-hmm. And they proved that they're ready and willing to invest in music and pay their hard-earned money to buy music. And I think it made an incredible statement, especially in this time.
Taylor Swift, ready to take on the world, ready to take on Spotify, ready to take on this week. Apple. We're going to look at what this all means, what it tells us about music streaming, where the business, distribution, and music itself may be going. Joining us first today from Washington, Kelsey McKinney, music writer for Fusion, the news and culture website. Kelsey McKinney, welcome back to On Point.
Hi, Tom. Thanks so much for having me
it's
again.
It's great to have you here again. And with us from New York, John Seabrook, staff writer at The New Yorker, where he covers the music industry. He's also author of the forthcoming book, The Song Machine, Inside the Hit Factory. John Seabrook, welcome to On Point. Wonderful to have you here.
Hi, Tom. Thanks very much. Nice to be here.
It's great to have you. Kelsey, first to you. What was the plan here? Apple Music is coming out. They're going to challenge Spotify. They said 3 months free for everybody, but that meant the artists would not be paid, and they just handed it down like a dictate until Taylor spoke up, I guess.
Yeah, so that's a little true and a little untrue. Okay. So Apple is entering into this massive streaming industry business, and what they had said to artists and labels is, we're not going to pay you for the first 3 months while our users aren't paying for this service. But then at the end of the 3 months, when they start paying a set fee per month, then we're going to back pay you by like increasing the rate per play that you're paid. So what they were trying to say is, we're going to pay you more later to like back pay for this stuff early on. But what most artists that aren't Taylor Swift, and she says this in her letter, she says for artists who are trying to get on their feet and for songwriters that are new, this isn't really acceptable. They can't wait 3 months for a paycheck. And they're not okay with Apple using their music for free on loan and then paying them back for it later, because there's no guarantee that will come back at the same revenue that it would before.
It's a long time not to be paid if you're living hand to mouth. Taylor Swift is not living hand to mouth. John Seabrook, do you buy it? Taylor Swift said in her open letter on Tumblr that she wasn't doing this for herself, that she was doing it for the young songwriter who just got his or her first cut and thought that the royalties would get them out of debt. She was doing it for the new folk, the new kids on the block.
Yeah, I buy that. I mean, I buy that as far as it goes. What Taylor Swift has done will actually help those people that much in the streaming world is another and much larger question. I think that what we're dealing with here when we talk about streaming is this enormous clash of cultures between a tech culture, which is about transparency and meritocracies and economies of scale and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And on the other side, you have the music business, which is really not about transparency at all, and it's really not about meritocracy. And these two cultures are about as far apart as two cultures can be. And because of the rise of streaming, they're being forced to sit in the same room together and work it out. And so ultimately, I think what needs to happen is there needs to be a lot more transparency in how artists actually do get paid from streaming, and whether or not Taylor's statement will help on that front, because Taylor has kind of a unique situation in that she's with an independent label that she partly owns.
Mm-hmm.
So she has much more control over how she actually gets paid by streaming services than most artists do. So that's actually a very big difference.
Kelsey, I want to get into the details here of what Apple Music is offering, how it's the same, how it's different from Spotify and others. But overall, are we headed into a period where, with music streaming, where artists, new or established, are going to be as well compensated as they were in the past or not?
So I think one thing that's important to remember is that music has always had a wealth divide. The people at the top, the people in the top 40, were always making significantly more money than someone putting out a record. And right now in music, because of the like huge explosion of the tech industry, because of the growth of the internet, really anyone can put out an album. And what we're starting to see in music is kind of the same divide that we're starting to see in the United States economic system, where you're losing this middle class of musicians. You have a bunch of like 1% artists who are making most of the money in the industry, and you have a bunch of people making no money, and it's the people in the middle who are really the ones that are suffering. There was a study a couple of years ago by the Future of Music Coalition that said that most artists today are making about $35,000 a year, which is something, but it's not enough to tour on. It's not enough to kind of build a brand on. It's not enough to live in the United States if you want to buy a house and have kids and do any of the like big things that you want to do as an adult. And I think the real concern for the music industry headed forward is how do you make these brand new services that are completely transforming the way that albums are bought and sold, the way that artists are produced and marketed? How do you make that work for this middle class of musicians that for the most part of history has influenced the future? How do you make sure that they don't get lost?
John, was there a time when that middle class did all right in the music business? I mean, we think of it as a kind of feast or famine. You know, you're a star or you're busking business. Is that wrong?
Well, I mean, I think it's true going back many years that the middle class artist has basically made the majority of their income from touring.
Mm-hmm.
They always have.
Right.
I mean, the way that middle-class artists got paid by labels has definitely changed in that in the old days, you know, you might get a relatively sizable advance, you know, $70,000 or something to make an album. And, you know, you then lived on that. And maybe in the long run, that didn't work out any better than getting paid fractions of a cent per stream. But it seems a lot better. And it definitely made the artists feel valued by the labels. And then it probably gave the labels license to go ahead and count in whatever kind of mysterious way they wanted to account for.
Right.
But at least they had $70,000. I think the big difference today is those advances have disappeared because there aren't the record sales to make them up. And the streaming revenues really aren't compensating. And so at least for now, we're in this kind of transitional period. Well, yeah, the middle class artists are getting screwed. And I do think if streaming does become the norm and there's a stable platform and it's around for 10 or 20 years, those middle class artists will probably figure out how to make money from it just the way they did in the past. But right now, we've gone from CDs to MP3s to streams in the course of, you know, 15 years.
Yep.
And no one really, the ground is shifting under all of our feet. No one knows how to get a purchase on it.
Apple says they want to be the place that does it right. This is a little ad released earlier this month for the new streaming service, Apple Music, they're calling it. We hear the voice here of musician Trent Reznor, Nine Inch Nails, in this ad for the service. The pitch being that Apple Music is designed to treat music and the musicians that make it with respect.
There needs to be a place where music can be treated less like digital bits and more like the art it is, with a sense of respect and discovery. And if that place could actually accommodate and support the artists who make the music, not just the top-tier artists, but the kids in their bedrooms too, provide them all with a home and a way to engage with their audiences, that would be pretty great. And that's what we set out to do with Apple Music.
Trent Reznor making the pitch for Apple Music. Kelsey, is this that place where the music is treated less like digital bits and more like the art it is?
I think Apple has some of the best marketing in the business. Yeah. I don't think they have the best product. And they're coming out and they're saying we have this magnificent new thing that artists are going to love. But essentially what Apple Music is it's a combination of a bunch of things that already exist. So Spotify already exists and artists are on it. Pandora already exists and artists are on it. Apple's putting both of these in one spot. And then they're also like marketing this elusive artist like back channel social network that they haven't really explained. But from what it sounds like it'll just be another Instagram feed. And so while they're saying like, oh, we're going to make art valuable, we're going to make this like brand new, exciting event, they haven't really done anything to make a brand new, exciting event. Everything about this product are things that already exist in the marketplace. So really what I think Apple is banking on is the fact that they have more users signed up to iTunes than Spotify and Pandora and Tidal combined.
Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point. We're talking this hour about Taylor Swift taking on Apple Music and winning, and the future of music streaming and of music. John Seabrook is with us from The New Yorker. Kelsey McKinney is here from Fusion, joins us today from Washington. You can join us as well. Can you believe what Taylor Swift has just pulled off? Was she right that Apple shouldn't roll out its new product on the backs of artists for nothing? Do you stream? What's your go-to service for streaming? Will you check out Apple Music? Are you wedded to Spotify? Is there something you want from music streaming that you're not getting? And artists, how's the streaming era working for you or not? Taylor Swift posting an open letter on Tumblr on Sunday. She's, to Apple, love Taylor. And she says in there, I respect the company and the truly ingenious minds that have created a legacy based on innovation, pushing the right boundaries. But goes on to say, I'm not sure you know that Apple Music will not be paying writers, producers, or artists for the first 3 months of its rollout. I find it to be shocking, disappointing, and completely unlike this historically progressive and generous company. Sunday morning that went out. Before the day was out, Apple had changed its policy. You can read Taylor Swift's entire letter. There's a link at our website, onpointradio.org. It's all tied up with Beats Music at Apple. Co-founder there and current Apple executive Jimmy Iovine laid out the pitch for Apple Music at the Apple keynote at its Worldwide Developers Conference just a couple weeks back. The emphasis was on the singularity of Apple Music.
It's all the ways you love music, all in one place. And that place is almost in a billion hands around the world already. One app, one single app on your iPhone.
Woohoo! How's it all going to work out after the Taylor flap? Well, maybe okay. Here's Jeff Price, CEO of Audium, service that gets artists their royalties when the music is played. Founder of TuneCore. He's talking on NBC's Power Lunch with Brian Sullivan last night. Says Taylor Swift's open letter could actually end up benefiting Apple.
This couldn't have played out any more brilliantly for everybody. Apple gets additional marketing and promotion for the forthcoming service launching in 9 days or so. They get to look like they have a soul because they actually have one. Taylor's fighting out there for what appears to be the little guy, and she actually is. And it raises all the boats in the water higher by increasing royalties and revenue.
All the boats in the water headed up. Kelsey McKinney and John Seabrook with us. Soraya's calling right now from Lexington, Kentucky. Soraya, what do you think? You're on the air.
Hello, Tom.
Hi.
Well, I want to celebrate Taylor Swift for standing out for all artists, not just for musicians, because I'm a fashion designer and I get into this situation that often get asked to participate in events and show my work, and usually I don't get any benefit, and they usually say it's for exposure. They don't take into consideration that one can die from overexposure. And as emerging artists, we have a difficult time making any money out of our work. And, you know, and there's this art graduates who are paying, you know, huge amount of money for their student loans and I have a family who depends on me. So I say, go, Taylor, and say it. Somebody needs to say it, and I'm glad she did.
I'm glad you put it right there, Soraya. Good luck to you, and thank you very much. Young artist, different field, but not looking to be asked to do everything for free all the time. One more. Thank you, Soraya. Alfred in Winthrop, Massachusetts. Alfred, you're on.
Yes, hello, Tom. When I was vice president of legislation for the Graphic Artists Guild, along with the Screen Actors Guild, Writers Union, and Photographers Union, we worked on the Copyright Revision Act, which extended the length of the copyright from death of the author plus 75 years to protect artists and their heirs from the arrogance of corporations.
What do you think about what Apple did and what Taylor did, Alfred?
It's totally arrogant. It's totally a power thing. It's like you don't ask anybody to work for nothing. And when it's not like Apple's going to go starving in 90 days. They got enough money. Why do they have to put all the pressure on the artists? And it's the same old story. The corporations try to wrench the profit, and usually the source of their whatever item is being produced, the guy that's producing it gets, kind of left behind.
Alfred, we've got it. Of course, they came right back to her. Eddie Q, right way high in Apple, tweeting, "We hear you, Taylor Swift and indie artists love Apple. Apple will pave artists for streaming even during customers' free trial period. Apple will always make sure that artists are paid. Hashtag iTunes, hashtag Apple Music." John Seabrook, Kelsey says what we have here is a packaged up version of things that are out there already. Spotify streaming, Pandora, like Apple's sort of a online radio service, and then they've got their social media angle here. What do you make of the whole package that they're offering, John?
Yeah, I agree. I agree with Kelsey. It doesn't offer anything new, which is rather unusual for Apple. I mean, if you go back to the introduction of the iPod, there were other MP3 players around, but Apple really won on design, and then when they innovated with the iTunes Music Store, they won on innovation, and they won on the system. They're not offering that this time around, and actually there are certain factors that kind of work against Apple. One is that, of course, the labels own part of Spotify. They have about 17% of Spotify, so in a sense, Apple is competing with the labels there. Also, the legacy of the iTunes Music Store and the music business is not a happy one. Most music people feel that Apple kind of hoodwinked the heads of the labels by breaking up the albums and offering songs for 99 cents. It really cut into the profit margins. And so there was really not a whole lot of good feeling there a couple of years ago. And in fact, I think Apple's had a lot of trouble negotiating some of these licenses. So, the one more thing, there's this sort of common wisdom that in the tech world, one big company wins, whether it's Google or Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
But I think in this case, it's a little bit different because the reason one big company usually wins in the tech world is because the economies of scale make it much cheaper to do a million than to do one. But in the music business and in streaming, you still have to pay the licensing costs. And the licensing costs are high. They're 70% of the revenue. And they don't get cheaper as your business gets bigger. So it's possible that old shibboleth of, one big company winning in the tech world isn't actually going to be true. And there will be room for different companies.
Of course, as Kelsey says, they've got a lot of market power with all their sort of installed user base, if you want to call it that, all the people already in the Apple world. Tom in Detroit, thanks for calling, Tom. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Good.
You know what? I listen to music the old-fashioned way, radio. I mean, in Detroit, we have one of the best radio markets in the country. I mean, I can hear anywhere from the Temptations, Dramatics, Spinners, to go to Bruno Mars, Taylor Swift, and Maroon 5 and Nicki Minaj within a few minutes of one another.
Yeah.
And, and I'm not caught up in the, the electronic stuff with the iPods and what have you. I mean, I'm 68, so I come from the age where dinosaurs roamed. But, if I want music, I'll go buy it. I don't, I think that, the artists who create this wonderful, art called music, I think they should be paid for it, and I think that if I want to hear it, I should go buy it.
Tom, I appreciate your call from Detroit. Kelsey, help us dive into all of that. And I guess the first question is, how many people remain in Tom's camp, that they would rather listen on the radio and buy the music? Sounds like Tom may still buy something, you know, physical here, not even iTunes. How many go to the iTunes model where you buy it by the cut from Apple or somebody else? And what about streaming? What portion of the music listening world now gets its music, in the U.S. anyway, gets its music from streaming, where you pay, let's say, a monthly subscription?
So he's right on about radio. Most Americans listen to the radio. It's something like between 96 and 98%, depending on the year of the polling. But most Americans are listening to the radio, and they're listening to it in their car dashboards and at home, and it's everywhere for them. But the radio has never made a lot of money for artists because the radio doesn't have to pay artists to use their license, performing artists, that is.
The artists make nothing when the radio plays their music? Is that true?
Performing artists do not get paid for plays on the radio.
Wow.
And so because of that...
Kelsey, it's like us, Iran, there's mm-hmm. like four countries in the world, China, and one other.
Every other developed country pays performing artists.
Okay.
But so there's kind of a problem there because most people are listening to the radio, but where artists are getting their profit is from whatever the secondary source is, right? So for the man who just called, he's going out and purchasing mm-hmm. normal music in like hard copies, mm-hmm. be it vinyl or CD. Last year, we saw a 13.5% drop in physical purchases of albums, downloads, everything.
Including downloads from iTunes and
yeah,
all
it
that.
Was the exact same mm-hmm. drop in percentage for physical sales and for digital sales of MP3s.
Wow.
So it's maybe a generational thing is probably the best guess, that people growing up in the Napster age and mm-hmm. post-Napster age have never owned music, and they don't see it as a thing that they want to do. They can just access it at any point on YouTube for free, and they don't have to think about paying for it. And it's even true if you look at Taylor Swift and her contemporaries. So Taylor Swift put out her first album almost 10 years ago now. She's really a different generation of artists than her contemporaries in the field because she's been producing for so long. So if you look at someone like Ed Sheeran, he said a couple of weeks ago, like, I don't think I'll ever make money off of my albums. I think I'll make money on touring, and that's fine mm-hmm. by me. And so there is kind of this divide for both listeners and artists.
So what about for those who do stream, Spotify completely dominant there at this point, 80-85% or something like that of streaming, I think. Do most people, John, pay the subscription for that? What is it, $10, $15?
$10 a month.
Yeah.
$10.
Or do they go for the free face of Spotify?
No, most people are still on it on the free face. It's about 25% paid subscriptions to the total number of users. And this is also, of course, another huge issue in the Apple rollout. Apple is not offering a free tier, except for these first 3 months. That's pressure that's coming from the labels who never liked the idea of giving music away for free. And yet, there is pretty hard evidence, particularly in the Scandinavian countries, showing that, you know, piracy, which was completely rampant in Sweden and Norway before Spotify came out, basically there was no music industry, or it was on the way out, and how it really has almost completely turned the situation around, and the free tier did, in fact, convert people to the paid tier. And now people are paying for the music for the first time. I mean, you know, as Kelsey was saying, we're dealing with a generation here that has never paid for music, right? No one has ever asked them for money for music because they've always been able to get it for free. So now Apple is saying, well, we're not going to offer a free tier. We're just going to ask for $10 a month. But okay, but are the younger generation really going to pay that? Or do you need the free tier to convert people over? You know, I think that's a very big question.
Kelsey, what's the evidence here? What gives Apple the confidence to say 3 months and then $10 a month, please?
Yeah, so I'm not actually super confident about this plan for them. I think that when you say we're going to give you 3 months for free and then we're going to make you pay for it, we see this with Spotify and we see it with Tidal and we've seen it with several other major streaming companies that once you ask people to pay, they say, I can listen to music on YouTube. YouTube's free.
Right,
I don't have to pay for it there. So why would I pay you $10 a month to have music? And I think one thing I'm really interested to see what Apple ends up doing at that 3 month mark, because I think they're working with a huge user base right now. There's something like 800 million iTunes subscribers. And so like they have a huge wealth of the world that they can say like, hey, use our music service, and maybe they will. But are they going to like it enough to pay for it? That's a whole different question. And I don't know that they will.
What about their version of the internet radio, sort of comparable to Pandora? They call it Beats One. That's free. Is that a sort of a intake valve, John?
Actually, I think that was the most interesting part of the whole announcement for me. Like, the idea that there's going to be this global radio station that's on 24 hours a day all around the world and playing songs in one market that may not be known at all, or even in languages that may not be known at all, in another market.
With DJs.
What's that?
With DJs, right?
Yeah, with DJs. I mean, it really sort of makes you wonder, what's the pop music of the future going to be like if that really takes off? I mean, is it going to be even like English language pop music, or is it going to be Korean pop music? Is it going to be Chinese? I mean, that actually is sort of an exciting thing to think about, just in terms of how music would change to respond to that global radio station. But the other thing is like, you know, when we talk about like music being free and how horrible that is, well, what is it on the radio? I mean, it's been free for a very long time, and
true,
artists haven't complained a whole lot about that because it promoted the artists. But now we've got this idea that free is sort of horrible and we have to do away with free. So,
Apple's free internet radio called Beats One. Of course, then they'll have Apple Music. That's $10 a month, of course. And then they've got these sort of social networking, their Connect area here. Here's Trent Reznor again, founder of Nine Inch Nails, talking for Apple about the whole ecosystem.
For fans, we've tried to create a complete experience by combining the catalog of the world's music with the music that's not in that catalog yet, direct from the artist to you, and the shared experience of Beats One. For artists, we've built an ecosystem we hope can start to provide the tools to grow, nurture, and sustain careers. One place, one complete thought around music.
One complete thought around music. That's sort of the Zen-like tag they're putting on this. Ryan in Ames, Iowa. What do you see coming, Ryan?
Hi, Tom. I appreciate your guest talking about the middle-class artists. I would say if you were to oversimplify it into the record company age, the MP3 age, and the streaming age, middle-class artists benefited a lot, I think, from the MP3 age, which was kind of a relatively short period. With the streaming, it's kind of a trickle-down model that I don't think has been proven yet in terms of artists getting paid the same amount.
Not trickling down. I mean, what are you seeing from your own work, Ryan? Are you being streamed, and are you getting this, what is it, 68, half a cent per listen or whatever it is?
Yeah, it's a fraction for a listen. And there's a lot of people that are doing it for free. But I think, what Taylor Swift brought up is that artists can't wait for that money. With Apple iTunes, you're getting 70 cents on a dollar. That's something that you get. You have to wait a month to get, but then you got, and with streaming, those fractions of a penny take a long time to add up.
Yeah, no kidding. I want to take a short break here. We'll come back and look at who gets paid what exactly on these streaming services and whether that may change in the Apple world, Apple Music. Tom York behind us here, Radiohead, of course, our friend, he's sampled us. But he pulled his solo albums from Spotify, saying the streaming service did not pay its artists enough. Here's the Eraser title song of his solo album. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. Hi, everybody. Tom here. Glad you're joining us for this On Point podcast. Before we get back to the show, I'd like to tell you about another podcast you might enjoy too, Dear Sugar Radio. Join hosts Cheryl Strayed and Steve Almond as they field questions about love, sex, work, guilt, money, you name it. That's Dear Sugar Radio. You can find it at wbur.org/Dear Sugar or subscribe on iTunes. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Major Lazer right there with Lean On. Currently topping the charts on Spotify. Number 10 on iTunes. We're talking this hour about Taylor Swift taking on Apple Music and winning, and the future of music streaming and of music, with John Seabrook of The New Yorker, Kelsey McKinney of Fusion. People listening and responding online on Facebook. Douglas says, I respect Swift for this. Step in the right direction. I'm going to listen to her music in a brighter light now. Ying Yang, bleak view of the whole thing. America streams while Earth burns. Okay, but we need some music while everything happens, whatever it is. And then here's another. Hypocrisy writes to us, wait, people pay for music? Well, sort of, yes, sometimes, kind of. Kelsey, can you explain how artists do get paid from Spotify, how they will get paid from Apple Music when it rolls out end of the month?
Sure. So the way that artists get paid depends on how their song is streamed. So either it's streamed in a form of direct service like Spotify or the part of Apple Music, which will let you pick what plays next, or they're paid for it streaming on a form of radio service like Pandora or the Beats One Radio. Both the Pandora isn't really as important here because it doesn't pay artists as much. They're more concerned with Spotify, which is why you see, well, they do pay artists as much, but they don't pay them. They don't end up getting as much money at the end from it. So artists are more concerned with Spotify and the form of Apple Music that will pay them for that because they want to be paid as much as possible. And the problem with these streaming services is that for your money to get to you, not only are you being paid so little, but it has to jump through so many hoops to get into your pocket. So your song is played on Spotify. Then that money goes out of Spotify through some weird channels to your label, through your label, down some weird channels, through like maybe a couple of middlemen. And at every portion of this, these people are taking a portion of this fraction of a cent that you got for your play.
0.68 of a cent per listen in the U.S. on Spotify in December. But not all of that goes to the artist. It's being nibbled even that as it goes down.
Right. So by the time an artist gets their 0.68 of a cent, it's even less than that. And so they're looking at these paychecks and they're saying, I'm getting paid absolutely nothing. And that's why I think what John said earlier is so important, is that when you had an advance and you got paid this like nibbled out piece of portion of an income,
there was still a chunk.
There was still a chunk. And you could say like, oh, well, I got paid earlier. Whereas now you have artists living month to month who are getting paid these like nibbled out portions of money and saying, I can't live on this.
So, John, does it all work ultimately, or do we end up with fewer musicians in the world because they're not being fed?
Well, there really has to be reform on the label end of it. What Kelsey's saying is correct, but it actually kind of goes even further than that. I mean, when you buy a CD of, let's say, Roseanne Cash, you know, Roseanne Cash is going to get a certain amount of the money that you spent for that CD. Mm-hmm. But when you stream, you know, Roseanne Cash on Spotify, Roseanne Cash isn't getting paid for your stream. What happens is the total number of streams goes into one big pot, which is the total number of revenue for that month, and then the labels decide to pay out Roseanne Cash based on what proportion of that total number of streams all of the people that streamed her represents, and they don't even tell her what the formula they're using for that is. So it's sort of like you would go to your bank and say, you know, like, I want to see my 501K.
Yeah.
And they say, well, we can't tell you how much you're making, you know, just trust us that, you know, we've got it under control. And so until that changes, you know, I don't think there's going to be any real change.
It's pretty wild. Jim in Nashville, Tennessee. Jim, thanks for calling. You're on.
Yeah, hi, Tom. Hi, folks.
Hi.
Hey, I just wanted to introduce a little conversation tangentially here for an entity that's been so far ignored in the conversation, and that is the songwriters. Mm. It may be obvious, but hasn't been touched on, that nothing happens until a song is written.
Yes.
I can tell you here in Nashville, serious songwriters are dropping like flies.
Why?
Because nobody can afford to be a songwriter anymore as a full-time occupation.
Because nobody can afford to pay you?
Where's the revenue going to come from?
Well, I mean, even if the artists are just touring, they have to play something, and fans want new music.
They do, but the formula for paying songwriters is such that even people who are particularly successful with a given song are not making enough money to justify a professional effort on a full-time basis. Just wish you'd talk about that a little bit, too.
We'll do, Jim, and I appreciate the call from the front lines there. Kelsey, what about, is it going to be all oldies in the future because nobody can afford to pay songwriters for new material?
Yeah, songwriters really got the raw end of the deal in the streaming business. And a lot of that is because of stuff we've already talked about. It's that performing artists are making most of their money on tour and merch. They're not making it off of sales. Well, when you're a songwriter and you wrote a hit single for a performer, all you're getting is the fraction of that streaming formula that goes through the calculus and through the label and into your hands. And the problem with that is that all of a sudden you have to make your entire life work on streams that are coming far after you wrote them for far less than you used to make. And on top of that, we're starting to see like a condensing of the field in songwriters, as this caller said, because they're kind of dropping like flies.
Condensing, one of those euphemisms, yeah.
And so part of the problem there is that, like, how are you going to, as a young songwriter, how could you ever break into this market? You're making no money. There's very little room for you to do anything unless you can also perform your own music. And most of the music industry functions on someone else writing their music. It's rare that a performer writes their own songs. And a lot of listeners don't realize that. And so the songwriters aren't the famous ones. They aren't the ones with the brand, and they really can't afford to live.
So here's my question for the two of you. We just got a couple of minutes. Does this end up over time? You know, they say, well, McLuhan, the medium is the message. Does this new medium, streaming, with all of its economic implications and everything else, the way people listen, the fact that albums are broken up, will it end up, John, changing the music we hear itself? Will it change music in some direction you can see now, John?
Yeah, I'm sure it will. All the mediums have, you know, the album brought in the album as an art form, and that was a glorious period for both artists and for listeners. The iTunes brought in the single, and so, you know, there's a lot of talk about sort of shifting towards sort of music targeted towards certain times of day, music that's made for certain activities, you know, whether it's working out or eating or studying or sleeping. You know, will artists start sort of thinking about that? I kind of hard to believe that, like, Led Zeppelin would make a workout album, but, you know, definitely there will be, but I think, you know, EDM is very popular on streaming services because who would ever buy an EDM album? But you can certainly stream EDM at your party, so that's a genre that's probably going to benefit from streaming, whereas, you know, folk might not do as well. So, yeah, I think there'll be lots of changes of this kind, but it's a little bit too early to probably say exactly what they're going to be.
How do you think Taylor's going to do in the new world, Kelsey?
I think she'll be fine.
The evidence so far, maybe heart rate music, digestive music, and Taylor Swift all out there in our futures. Apple Music on its way right now. We will watch their competition with Spotify and more as it plays out. What a fascinating little drama over the weekend. Very grateful to the two of you for taking us into it today. John Seabrook with The New Yorker. Wonderful to have you from New York. Thanks for joining us, John.
Thanks, Tom. Thank you.
And Kelsey McKinney with Fusion from Washington today. Thank you for joining us again, Kelsey.
Thanks for having me again, Tom.
In a moment, Justin Bieber, Usher, and a $10 million lawsuit claiming they copied parts of their hit song, Somebody to Love. This is On Point. On Thursday, a U.S. Court of Appeals revived a $10 million lawsuit claiming that Justin Bieber and Usher illegally copied parts of their 2010 hit Somebody to Love, that they took the melody, chorus, beat, chords, lyrics, and name from Devin Copeland, an R&B singer known as DeRico, and his songwriting partner, Mario Overton. We want to look at that. Joining me now from Cleveland to talk about the lawsuit, John Kellogg, Assistant Chair of the Music Business and Management Department at the Berklee College of Music, practicing entertainment lawyer. John Kellogg, welcome back to On Point.
Hi, Tom. Always a pleasure.
Great to have you. What's the claim here, John, exactly?
Well, you know, Tom, I say every time the music gets played, somebody gets paid. And if you're an artist, songwriter, or producer, I say you should get paid, not played. And I think DeRico and his songwriting partner, Mario Overton, wrote this song, Somebody to Love. It was presented to a music scout who played it for Usher years ago, and It was reported that Usher liked the song. And then a few years later, they hear this song by Justin Bieber, written by Justin and Usher, and it's they think it's substantially similar to theirs. So they brought the lawsuit. It was dismissed on the lower court level and was just reinstated just a couple of days ago. So it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out.
This reminds us of what the big battle, I think maybe the last time we talked was about Pharrell Williams and Robin Thicke, the estate of the children of Marvin Gaye, went after right. them, and they won, what was it, $7-8 million for the...
Yeah, $7.4
million. So that time it went their way. We'll talk about how that happened. John Kellogg, stand by. Let's let our listeners just hear these back-to-back. Usher, Justin Bieber collaborated on Somebody to Love, peaked at number 15 on the Billboard Hot 100 back in 2010. Now, $10 million lawsuit with R&B singer Devin Copeland, DeRico, and his songwriting partner Mario Overton. They say Bieber and Usher illegally copied parts of the song they originally wrote. Here's the version, well, here's the song recorded by Usher and Bieber.
I just need somebody to love.
Okay, John, we're going to hear DeRico in a minute, but as we listen to this in the background, what should we be listening for to judge whether it's too similar to DeRico's music?
Well, certainly the lyrics are similar, so that's not going to be any question, but you're going to listen to the melody as well. I mean, DeRico argues that that this song shared the same beat pattern, time signatures, similar chords, and lyrics to their song, which we're getting ready to listen to right now.
And do you think that from Usher hearing this once, or hearing it who knows how many times... Let's say he just heard it casually. Would it stick in his head so closely that he might reproduce it knowingly or unknowingly later?
Well, that's certainly a possibility. And once again, once you prove access, once you prove he heard it, and it's and his version is substantially similar to the one that DeRico wrote, it can raise a question as to whether or not it is substantially similar. And that's what this case is about. Should a jury be able to make that determination where a trial court prior and dismissed the suit?
Okay, a jury is going to be listening very closely. Let's put ourselves in their chairs right now. So here's Usher and Bieber. Let's take that down a little bit and hear DeRico's Somebody to Love. R&B singer, this is Devin Copeland, known as DeRico, songwriting partner Mario Overton, claiming this was ripped off. Here's the original version, DeRico and Overton. Okay, John Kellogg, first thought that comes to my mind is there's a lot of similar sounding music out there these days. You know, that both of these sound a little bit generic. So in that sea of sameness, do you listen to this as a pro and say, substantially similar, sounds copied?
Well, you know, that's the problem. Me making that decision as a pro has no bearing on what a reasonable jury is going to come up with. And this is the concern that people are having with these copyright infringement cases. It's not the experts that make the decision. It's a common everyday thing. A reasonable jury has to think and listen to it and determine whether or not they're substantially similar.
I mean, I could imagine a jury in the hands of a savvy attorney with lots of good vocabulary about music making any argument about these two. Yes or no, up or down?
Sure, you can have one. I mean, that's certainly what you had in the Gay case. The attorney for the Gay estate made very interesting arguments, and it was enough for the jury to come back with a $7.4 million verdict. It's going to be very interesting, Tom, to find out once the decision is made by the appeals court, to find out whether the appeals court agreed with the jury or found that there were no errors and uphold the jury's verdict, or whether or not they feel that it should go back to the court and there were errors made.
Okay, you practice law. You're right in the middle of this whole business. If you were sitting with Usher and Justin Bieber, and they played their new tune for you, they're excited about it, and you knew about DeRico's Somebody to Love, and you had
right.
that tune, would you say, hey, guys, why don't you better give DeRico a cut here, or you're going to be in trouble, or would you say, you're probably all right?
I think in these days and times, I would have to urge them to try to give them credit, try to give DiRico credit and work out an agreement with him on that. We've had a rash of settlements, Tom, since the Gay case came down. A number of things, particularly with Uptown Funk, as you probably know.
Mm-hmm.
The Gap Band from a 1978 recording, Oops Upside Your Head, recently got a percentage of that song, where Jay-Z settled with Bruno Spiori regarding a sample. Kanye West settled with a group from my hometown, Cleveland, Ohio,
yep.
The Rosa Twins, for using a portion of their song Bound. So in this day and time, it's important. If it sounds like somebody else's material, you should reach out to them and try to work out a settlement.
John Kellogg, it's always great to hear from you. Thank you very much for joining us today from Cleveland, Ohio, John. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, take care.
John Kellogg, author of Take Care of Your Music Business. Behind us right here, Justin Bieber. Well, of course, Around the World with Ludacris. See what happens with that one. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.